This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. While Americans have been occupied with the war in the Gulf, the Soviet Union has been using violence to suppress the independence movements in Lithuania and Latvia. And in his attempt to restore central control, Gorbachev has granted new powers to the KGB and the police. The withdrawal of freedoms in the Soviet Union is straining relations between the U.S. and the USSR. At the same time, President Bush wants to keep the Soviets in the Gulf alliance. Today, President Bush met with the Soviet Foreign Minister Alexander Bezmertnik. They agreed to postpone the summit meeting originally planned for February until later this year. We invited journalist Robert Cullen to talk with us about the crackdown in the Baltics, its implications for the future of the Soviet Union, and for U.S.-Soviet relations. Cullen is a former Newsweek Moscow bureau chief. He's written about the Soviet Union for The New Yorker and The Atlantic, and he's now writing a book on the Soviet Empire. He last visited the Soviet Union in December. I asked him why the upcoming summit meeting was important.
There are two things about the summit that are important. One is that it symbolizes the continuation of the progress which has been made in the Soviet-American and East-West relationships over the last 5 years, that regardless of the present internal problems in the Soviet Union, that progress in the external relationships can continue. The second thing is that the summit will be the place where the two leaders will sign the strategic arms agreement, which will be, I think, a landmark in arms control and a landmark in the effort to reduce the risk of nuclear war, which is something that we have all tended to not think about for the last few years because it seems so unlikely, but which, based strictly on the arsenals, is still quite a threat.
What impact do you think the Gulf War is having on the Soviet Union now?
It's a minimal impact at this point because the Soviets realize they're in no position to do very much one way or the other. The Gorbachev-Shevardnadze leadership chose to back the United States and back the United Nations. I think that there are people in the conservative movement who would probably tend to stay away from that and tend to either tacitly back the Iraqis or take a more neutral position. But I don't think that the Gulf situation plays any significant role in any Soviet political developments at this point.
But it's playing a role in the way the United States is trying to conduct its relationship now with the Soviet Union.
It certainly is a factor in whether the Bush administration is willing to endorse serious sanctions against the Soviet Union, because I think the fear is that not so much that the Soviets would turn around and start shipping weapons and so on to Saddam Hussein, because I don't think that that's very likely, but certainly in any post-war period, if the Soviets were to return to their practice of backing the Arab intransigence and so forth, that would make it all the more difficult to conduct any effort to set up a stable Middle East.
If the gains in human rights and freedom of speech are being eroded so rapidly in the Soviet Union, does this mean that the Cold War could start up again too?
Well, it depends on how seriously they're eroded. There are a lot of things that the Soviets have done, both in their external policies and their internal policies, which we have to remember 5 years ago seemed highly unlikely and would have seemed almost impossible under the Brezhnev or Chernenko or Andropov regimes. For example, right now there are thousands of Soviet Jews leaving the country every month and going to Israel or in some cases to the United States. For example, Soviet troops are still on their way out of Germany. They have still permitted the reunification of Germany. They are still permitting the democratization in Eastern Europe to proceed. They are still negotiating seriously about dramatic reductions in strategic arms and in conventional forces in Europe. And it's, I think, important not to forget that those agreements are based largely on very one-sided concessions that the Soviets made in recent years. So I think that to say that just because they are moving into the Baltics and cracking down on separatist movements, the Cold War will resume may be premature, because the Cold War, don't forget, was predicated on things like the Soviet arms buildup, Soviet dominion over Eastern European countries, and so on. Obviously, you have to take into account what the Soviets are doing in the Baltic and internally in calculating what kind of country you're dealing with. But I think that if the Cold War ever was based on a real threat, and I think it was, then you still have to assume that that threat has substantially diminished.
But I wonder if the erosion in rights now in the Soviet Union represents a return to power of the hardline communists who waged the Cold War with the United States.
Well, it does and it doesn't. I think that it certainly represents a movement back toward power by hardline communists, but it's important to remember that they are probably not as hardline as people like Andrei Gromyko were. I spoke in Moscow last month to Yegor Ligachev, who is the kind of eminence grise of the conservatives in the Soviet Communist Party, and he said that he had no problem with defining the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan as adventurism, not something that he would want to repeat. He had no interest, he told me, in trying to reclaim or regain Soviet dominion over Eastern Europe. He did have some serious problems with the way the Soviets had precipitously allowed the reunification of Germany. He did have extremely serious problems with what he saw as a threat to the integrity of the Soviet Union by separatist movements in the republics. And he did have serious problems with the way Gorbachev has administered the economy over the last 5 years. Frankly, any sane economist would have problems with the way Gorbachev has administered the Soviet economy over the last 5 years. So I think that if you take them at their word, and I think that you have to be careful about that, but by and large, I tend to believe that if suddenly Ligachev and others of his kind absolutely usurped all the positions of power around Gorbachev and he began to do exactly what they wanted, it does not mean that they would send the army back into Eastern Europe. It does not mean that they would send the army back into Afghanistan. I don't think they can do that, and I think that the conservatives of the Ligachev stripe, at least, understand that.
Today, Soyuz, the largest newspaper in the Soviet Union, reported that if Gorbachev doesn't crack down in the Baltics, that the army could split and stop obeying the Kremlin. And there's speculation of the chance of a civil war in the Soviet Union. Do you think that there's a chance of civil war in the Soviet Union? And if so, what would the division look like?
There certainly is a chance for conflict. Whether it would spread to the extent of a civil war is not clear. I think that there are a number of factors at work. In some of the republics, particularly in the Caucasus, the Armenians and the Georgians and the Azerbaijanis are quite well armed. Over the last couple of years, they've hijacked train loads of tanks, as a matter of fact. They've gotten their hands on old Soviet artillery pieces that are now capable of firing. I was up on the Azerbaijani-Armenian border in September and saw a village that had been pretty much destroyed by artillery that was under the control of Armenian separatists. And so there is the possibility of resistance on a sort of massive level from the Transcaucasian area. The Baltic separatists are not as well armed, and I don't think that they are capable of anything more than symbolic resistance of the type we've seen this month to any effort by the Soviet army to impose its control. Where you really have a potential for conflict is if the army itself splits, as this article suggested it might. I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows, where the Soviet officer corps would come down if they were asked to shed a lot of blood in order to suppress the democratic and separatist movements in all of the republics. I think that the example of Romania suggests that some of the officers and a lot of the conscripts would find it very difficult to obey those orders. I think that's why in the last couple of years the Soviets have organized a special group within the Ministry of the Interior's armed forces, which have become known as the Black Berets. These are volunteer troops. It's not clear how many of them there are, but by virtue of being volunteers and volunteers who have gone into it knowing that their job is going to be to suppress internal disorder, one can assume that they belong to that segment of Russian society which sees the separatist movements as a threat and is eager to repress them. So that I think for the moment, given the situation in the Baltics, the Soviets have more than enough loyal armed forces to do the job of violent repression if that's what they choose to do. Whether they would have enough if the job were extended to the Russian Republic or extended to the Caucasian republics remains to be seen.
What do you think is Gorbachev's motive for repressing the independence movements in the Baltics? Do you think it represents a change of heart, a change of direction, or just something very pragmatic like his political future?
Some of both. The evidence suggests that neither Gorbachev nor any of the people close to him really understood what they were letting themselves in for when they introduced glasnost and democratization in the period from, say, 1986 to 1988. I think they really thought that the communist parties in the republics could retain the loyalty of the intellectuals and other people in the republics by being the group that was advocating these kinds of reforms. Instead, what they found was that once they were unleashed, the intellectuals and other popular groups in the republics quickly moved into a pro-independence posture, and that posture proved extremely attractive to the electorate as soon as they were able to vote in free elections. So I don't think that they went into this process of democratization on the assuming that it would lead to the dissolution of the Soviet Union. I think they assumed, in fact, that it would probably strengthen the Soviet Union, that it would make the people in the republics happier and more productive. If they did, and I believe they did, then it was a gross miscalculation. Now it's become a question of whether or not they can live with the consequence of what they've set off, which is the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And I think that if the economy were doing better, if the general social situation in the Soviet Union were more orderly and stable, and if the process in the republic seemed to be moving along gradually and with a certain minimal respect for Soviet law, then the people in the Kremlin who argue that regardless of whether we want the republics to leave or not, they have a right to leave, and if we're going to be a government of law, we have to extend that right, they might have a chance to prevail. But in the present situation, where the economy is going to hell, there's a tremendous and pervasive fear of chaos and disorder at all levels of Soviet society, and where the process in the republics is developing in the direction where they fear an influx of Russian refugees if they allow the republics to continue along the road they've taken, there is very little likelihood that such liberal opinions will prevail in the Kremlin. And I think that, therefore, Gorbachev has begun listening to the conservatives who say that these are national chauvinists. They shouldn't have been given the right to speak out in the first place. They're being whipped up by foreigners, and we, as guardians of the Soviet Union, have the duty to suppress them.
Journalist Robert Cullen is my guest. He's working on a book on the Soviet Empire. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Robert Cullen is my guest. He's a journalist, former Moscow bureau chief for Newsweek from 82 to 85. He's now working on a book on the Soviet Empire. There is the issue of, has Gorbachev chosen this time to violently suppress the independence movement in the Baltics because of the Gulf War, figuring that the world's attention will be diverted to the Gulf right now? What do you think?
Maybe in a tactical sense, in the sense that he chose to do it now instead of next month or last month. But in the broader sense, the conservative tide that is impelling him to do this has been gathering for some time and would have caused it to happen sometime around now, regardless of what was going on in the Persian Gulf.
Can you compare for us what the freedoms in the Baltics are now compared to what they were a few weeks ago before the violent suppression started in January 13th?
Well, there is still a fair amount of independent criticism and independent voices that are coming out of the Baltics. The governments are still controlled by the separatist groups which came up into being in the last few years and which won in the elections in 1989 or early in 1990. And the military has taken power and taken control of the broadcast facilities and a number of printing facilities in Lithuania. It's taken fewer steps of that sort in Latvia, although it could at any moment make more moves of that type. So that what you have, in effect, is a sort of standoff where the threat of force, at least, has not caused the Baltic peoples to submit. And they can't, by virtue of the political means at their disposal, force Moscow to grant them their independence. So it's an unstable standoff, but at the moment what you have is a standoff.
Do you think it could still go either way at this point, or do you think the independence movement is finished?
I think in the medium to long run, and by that I mean anywhere from 3 years on to 10 or 20, the independence movements will prevail. I think in the short run, and by that I mean anywhere from the next 6 months to the next 3 or 4 years, they won't. I think that a period of repression is at hand, and that in one form or another, they're going to be repressed for a while. I think that it may well be that the period of reform that Gorbachev initiated has run its course, and as has happened in the past in Russia and in the Soviet Union, you're in for a period of conservative retrenchment. But I think that there is a critical mass of people, educated people, members of the Soviet elite, who understand now and can't be dissuaded from the fact that, A, the old ideology, the communist ideology, it just isn't going to work, and B, that anything that takes its place that will work will have to have a certain amount of freedom and free expression. And I think that the next wave of reformers, whenever they come along, probably will start from the assumption that any successful reform is going to have to operate from the assumption that some of the republics are going to have to be given their independence.
What's at stake for the Soviet Union here? Why is it so important for the Soviet Union in their eyes to prevent the independence movement from getting any further?
Well, if you talk to Soviets about this, almost invariably they start arguing that they can no more afford to allow a Lithuania to secede from the Soviet Union than the United States could allow Texas to secede if, say, the Mexican-American population of Texas voted that they wanted to rejoin Mexico or become independent. And while their argument is imprecise and their analogies have a lot of flaws, at the root of it, I think, is their belief that a great power tends to be a multinational enterprise to which, by either persuasion or force, is capable of holding to it a variety of lesser nations. And I think they fear that if they allow the process of disintegration to begin, they will lose their stature as a great power. And in addition to that, there's no telling where that process of disintegration will end once it starts. The Soviet Union is in many respects like one of those Matryoshka dolls, which you may have seen, the nesting dolls that are made out of wood. You start taking the biggest one apart, and then there's a smaller one, but you can take that apart, and pretty soon you get down to a little kernel. And if you look at Russian history, back in the 14th century, Moscow was a little kernel of land, maybe no bigger than Rhode Island. And over centuries, it's accrued all this enormous territory. But there are still people on those territories who can look back on history and say, wait, you know, back in the 17th century, Siberia belonged to the Yevanky people and these other people that are similar to the Eskimos, say. So now we want Siberia back. The Ukrainians can look at the Ukraine and say, I'm sorry, back in the 16th century, the Ukraine was independent and we want it back. And Russia could be left with a very small nucleus of territory, really. So I think that they have this sense that the process of disintegration, once it starts, may not be easy to stop, and it could leave Russia being a very small and inconsequential country.
Can you give us a sense of what it was like internally until, you know, a few weeks ago in the independence movement in Lithuania? What kind of controversy, what kind of dissension was there within the movement itself?
Well, Lithuania was a very depressed state when I was there in December. The people, I think, had the sense that they were like somebody who had dreamed for years and years of buying a grand piano and filling their house with music, finally got the money together and bought the grand piano, and then discovered that they would have to learn how to play it before they could hear any music. They were disappointed that their democracy and their independent government had not produced real independence. They were disappointed at the state of their economy. And I think they were feeling that a repressive wave from Moscow was inevitable. Still, when you compare it to the situation the Baltics were in 5 or 6 years ago, the first time I visited them, they were incomparably better off in terms of freedom and the right to speak out and a sense that they were masters in their own house.
Do you think that the crackdown on the independence movement could have been avoided if the independence movement in the Baltics played their hand a little differently.
Well, it's very difficult to say, but I would have played the hand differently, and I think that there is at least the chance that it could have been handled differently. I think that there's a good case to be made that they should have played along with the law on secession that was passed in the Soviet Union earlier this year, or I'm sorry, early in 1990, which required them to hold a referendum on secession as a first step in the process of leaving the country. And that would have, I think, given Gorbachev some cover in that it would have enabled him to say, look, they're acting in accordance with a law that the Supreme Soviet passed, not I. And therefore, as chief executor of the laws, I have the obligation to allow them to do that. As it happened, they basically chose to defy his authority and make it a question of whether he was going to enforce the laws or not. And I think that was a fundamental mistake.
America had so embraced Gorbachev and his reforms, and I guess you could say the world did too. I mean, after all, he won the Nobel Peace Prize just a few months before starting the crackdown in the Baltics. I wonder if you're personally saddened by this, or if you kind of expected it as a possibility.
It's very saddening and disheartening to see what's going on now. You can read history and see that it's probably something to be expected and something that will pass in time. But I think of a lot of friends of mine in the Soviet Union who have found new opportunities and flourished in ways that they could not have dreamed of doing 6 or 7 years ago. And the thought that that will be taken away from them, and that the chance for Russia to become a modern, liberal, civilized country will be put off for any number of years, that to me is very saddening, very disheartening.
Robert Cullen, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Robert Cullen has written about the Soviet Union for The Atlantic and The New Yorker. He's now writing a book on the Soviet Empire. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.